Today, we are going to learn a little bit more about the EBU, or the European Blind Union. We'll find out all about the organisation and some of its big successes and current projects. And telling us all this will be the president, Wolfgang Angermann, who is in Germany at the moment. Wolfgang, thank you very much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Tell me, first of all, Wolfgang, a little bit about yourself then and your involvement, how you got involved with the EBU.
I was educated as a lawyer, and I've been practicing as a CEO for the German Blind Self-Help Association, as mainly dealing with blind professionals and students. My second part of my professional career, I was the CEO of the German Deafblind Center, which is situated in Hanover, northern Germany, and I worked for them 18 years. So I have a legal background, and of course, my work also consisted a lot of social benefits, issues, and things like that. I was involved in the self-help movement in the 70s when I joined the German Federation of Blind Students and Professionals, and I was really involved in their campaigning. And as the CEO of that association, I also was dealing with international work pretty early and took part in the founding assembly of the European Blind Union in 1984 in Hurdal, Norway.
For those who are perhaps not familiar with the European Blind Union, obviously it's changed a great deal over the years and no doubt grown, but what was the idea behind the organization in the first place?
The first idea was to merge the international federations that existed at that time. We had two organizations, one mostly dealing with members who came from institutions, and the other one dealing with members from organizations of blind people. So in order to merge them, the European Blind Union was founded, as well as the World Blind Union. They were founded in the same year. And ever since, these two organizations, let's say the World Blind Union, of course, is the roof of all this, and the EBU is a regional body of the World Blind Union. Now, ever since, these unions have dealt with the specific issues of blind and partially sighted people. Of course, institutions still play a great role in terms of collaboration, but it has turned out that blind and partially sighted people are those who are steering those organizations and have, of course, always set the targets and have always tried to implement what they have tried to achieve in terms of campaigning and setting issues dealing with social affairs for blind and partially sighted people.
So you're working with these organizations who are perhaps more at the grassroots, helping to support people, campaigning for changes in their countries and so on. But the European Blind Union really bringing them together and making their voice more powerful.
Yeah, that's our target, and that's what we really have achieved during those now more than 30 years of existence. We have pursued a lot of campaigning about, well, starting with the euro, for example. In the United Kingdom, you don't have the euro, but when it came to introduce this currency, we, of course, had to see to it that the bills didn't look like the dollar bills, all same size, and very, very difficult to distinguish from one each other by blind and partially sighted people. So we succeeded in negotiating that those bills were of different sizes, so we can still distinguish one bill from the other. And of course, also the coins were part of our negotiations. And we had a working group dealing with the responsible people in the European Union at that time. And of course, that included issues like having Braille on pharmaceutical products. We also succeeded in having that. But then after a while, it became more and more important to turn to other campaigning, such as access to books, for example, and especially about the exchange of books cross-border. We had the problem, for example, that a book which had been transcribed in the UK also were transcribed in Australia or in other countries, English-speaking countries, just because people were not allowed to export this book from London to Melbourne. And we dealt in campaigning for a treaty with the World Publishers Association, which now is known as the Marrakesh Treaty, and which is one of has been one of the really largest and greatest campaigns we had during the last years. And we now succeeded that this treaty at last came into existence, but still it needs to be ratified, for example, by the UK. It has not been yet ratified, and as long as it is not ratified, of course, this very, very useful import-export regime, which is part of this treaty, is not valid. So we really still hope that people are getting ahead with that. Luckily enough, after long, long negotiations and long campaigning, the European Union now is about to ratify it. The respective decisions in the European Parliament, Council, and Commission have been taken, and by the middle of this year, we will have a ceremony of the ratification, which is very important, because then all the 25 countries of the European Union have to follow. And I'm really confident that also the United Kingdom, Brexit or not, will succeed in that and will follow up.
Would you say then that over the years and the decades, the voice of organisations through the European Blind Union has grown louder and political bodies, organisations do take notice now?
I think what is most interesting and absolutely necessary to know is that the European Union, with regard to regional extension, it is from Iceland to Malta and from Portugal to Kazakhstan or Azerbaijan. So that means we are not only dealing with the European Union, of course not. All European countries are part of the European Blind Union. We are counting now 44 members, and this is very important to know, because this means that we are really aiming at including all the different social structures we find and the cultural backgrounds of our people within our European Blind Union, which is not easy to do at some point, because of course there are also very large differences within the organizations we have. For example, you have a very good infrastructure when you take a look at your own country, UK, when you take a look at RNIB, which is a very sophisticated organization. And on the other hand, you find organizations who really struggle with even being in existence, for example, in some of our small eastern countries who in former times belonged to the USSR. And of course, we have to rely on the large organizations who are the basis for the functioning of EBU. We have an office in Paris, a small team of colleagues, just four colleagues, four employees beside our executive director. But then we have to rely, of course, on the infrastructure of our members in order to take the campaigns forward. We can coordinate, we can support. These organizations need, in terms of information, in terms of spreading the news and things like that. But when it comes to the campaigning inside their country on the national level, it's up, of course, to all the national members to go ahead and, with our backing, try to persuade and lobby for the respective campaign.
A real pooling of power there, a cooperative, if you like, of these organisations coming together. And as you say, supporting each other when you think about the differences in countries as well. I think that was quite an important point you made there about, for example, the UK or some of the Eastern European countries. There are still some stark differences in terms of equalities, laws, and perhaps welfare support, employment, and so on. You've highlighted, for instance, Marrakesh there. What would you say would be the other big project at the moment for the EBU? What's really in focus at the moment?
Yeah, besides the Marrakesh Treaty, it is the European Accessibility Act. We hope for a directive and aiming, not only hoping, but we're fighting for a directive which would implement legislative act in order to make goods of daily living, services we all need, more accessible than they are now. And this is a very hard way to go because we face opposition, especially of the industry, of private enterprises, because they're afraid of money that they might have to spend in order to remove barriers from their products and things like that. So if you want to succeed on that, you need a kind of directive on that. And that, of course, a directive is something which gives a legal background on the EU level. But what we all know, when you have a directive like that, it will also have some effects on non-EU countries, because it is always, if you succeed, a good practice to be dealt with by non-EU governments. The other thing is about those silent vehicles, which will come up during the forthcoming years. We will have mixed traffic in our cities, consisting of vehicles with the normal, which is motorized in a way we all know, with the diesel or gasoline-driven motors. And on the other hand, we will have electric vehicles, and those electric vehicles are very silent. By that silence, they cause a danger for vulnerable pedestrians, such as blind and partially sighted people, but also any pedestrian who, for any reason, might be permanently or just for a short while disconcentrated. So what we achieved was that those vehicles have to bear a what we call AVAS, a vehicle audio system, the AVAS. And that means that those vehicles will produce an audible noise in order to be heard.
A very important point, you know, not just for the safety, as you say, of blind or partially sighted people, but people with perhaps hearing impairments or in very busy areas where it's difficult to hear anyway, if you're crossing the road and so on. So, you know, that really has a benefit for many. And indeed, when you talked about technology or goods and services, you know, we are in the 21st century with more and more off-the-shelf products becoming more accessible and smart devices and so on. You would think that getting the message to manufacturers to design accessibility at the beginning would make sense for them, because they could be blocking out, if you like, a market there which has money to spend on their products.
That's absolutely true, because those manufacturers don't realize that there is a fast-growing market of aging people, of older people, who will have a lot of money to spend, and their products should be accessible for all those people. And the older you get, the more problems you may have in terms of vision, in terms of hearing. Well, there may be a lot of kind of deficiencies you have to deal with. And on the other hand, you are and will be a very important customer and consumer. So that's, of course, very, very important for the industry to look at. There's another point I'd like to mention, and that's another campaign which is very important. We all have to deal with the accessibility of websites. It is daily practice now that we are dealing with websites to go shopping, for example. And it's especially for blind and partially sighted people very useful to have a website which is accessible, where they can take a look at, a virtual look at products with their descriptions. And when this website is not accessible, they are excluded from taking part in the normal flow of selling and buying. So the other thing is that for example, many administrations in countries will more and more turn to virtual administration in order to give citizens the possibility to not have to go to an authority to apply for a certain benefit or to apply for the allowance to build a house and things like that. And in some countries, they have already very sophisticated systems on the internet like that. And it's absolutely necessary that those systems are accessible for blind and partially sighted people. And we have succeeded on EU level to have a web directive which claims barrier-free websites of public institutions. And now it's up to the national members of the EU to implement this directive.
Wolfgang, we're almost out of time, and we do hope to speak with you again on a more regular basis for some updates on the campaigns and successes and so on. But in the meantime, if people would like to learn more about the European Blind Union, what's the best way to do that?
Oh, I recommend to visit our website, www.euroblind.org, which gives you a lot of information about EBU, about the national members, about who is doing what in EBU, and you also can obtain a newsletter from the EBU, which is issued in English, French, Spanish, and German. And there is, of course, always the possibility, if there are questions, to turn to our office and ask those questions.
Wolfgang Angermann, President of the European Blind Union, thank you for speaking with us on RNIB Connect Radio.
It was my pleasure. Thank you.